A year ago, state legislators passed House Bill 2. It's a controversial law that almost immediately set off a national debate about public safety, common sense, and government authority. At the heart of the debate is a room we don't think about much, except perhaps when we're in a long line at a basketball game or we need a quick stop on a road trip. Bathrooms. We seem to take public bathrooms for granted, and for most people, deciding which one to use is not complicated. But North Carolina's public bathrooms came into the national spotlight this year. Among other things, House Bill 2 requires people to use the public bathrooms that correspond with the sex listed on their birth certificate, focusing on their anatomy, not their gender identity. For transgender people, the law led to plenty of confusion.
The day that it passed, I had to pee, and I was like, all right then, what do I do?
Luke Duvey was a 17-year-old junior at Panther Creek High in Cary that day. He was born a girl, but by his sophomore year, identified as a boy. He cut his hair short, started wearing men's clothes, and started taking testosterone to help with the transition. He hasn't had sex reassignment surgery yet.
Do I go into the girls' bathroom now? As it's technically illegal for me to go into the guys' bathroom. But if I go into the girls' bathroom, the social backlash it could have of, oh, a guy just waltzed into the bathroom.
Some estimates have North Carolina with an adult transgender population in the tens of thousands. In more than 200 cities and counties across the United States, some protections have been given to people who are transgender. And in thousands of others, there are none. From North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, I'm Elizabeth Baer.
And I'm Jeff Tiberi. And today, a state divided. HB 2 and transgender rights, a special report by North Carolina Public Radio. This hour, we recap the last year in North Carolina through the lens of House Bill 2 and take a deep dive into this complex chapter of the state's history. HB 2 has grabbed headlines for the last year, but this story really began a couple of years ago with efforts to add Charlotte to the list of cities that protect people regardless of their sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. And that sparked immediate opposition from Charlotte residents.
Once again, this city council and you, Mrs. Mayor, have divided this city, raised the passions and anger of many on both sides, and pitted the good people of this region against one another.
That mayor was Democrat Jennifer Roberts. She and Charlotte City Council members heard from residents for months.
Is the non-discrimination ordinance.
Then there was a marathon council meeting in February of last year. 140 people spoke, and following 3 hours of public comment, the council passed a city law protecting LGBT people.
7-4, and thank you very much for your attention.
Those cheers in Charlotte followed weeks of warnings from Raleigh. State lawmakers discouraged local leaders from passing any sort of measure, promising a swift response.
A day after Charlotte's ordinance passed, the Speaker of the North Carolina House vowed to take action. And a few weeks after that, state lawmakers were back in Raleigh.
The House will come back to order.
Things moved quickly during that one-day special session. Republicans had drafted a bill, but it wasn't immediately available to everyone. Citizens, press, and Democratic lawmakers didn't get a glimpse of what was coming until moments before the debate began. During a committee meeting, State Representative Bobby Richardson, a Democrat from Franklin County, underscored the confusion.
Is it a possibility that we could be given at least 5 to 10 minutes to read this for ourselves from front to back? Because right now, I'm not sure of what is really in this bill.
Bills usually don't become laws in a day, but House Bill 2 moved through both chambers in a matter of hours. It was the beginning of months of divisive rhetoric.
Still, the bill had the support it needed. Republican Buck Newton echoed the refrain of many conservatives on the Senate floor that day.
City Council of Charlotte lost their mind and decided to embark upon a very radical course.
Newton and other Republicans said the bathroom bill was about protecting women and children by keeping men out of women's bathrooms and locker rooms. However, they offered virtually no evidence supporting concerns over public safety. Democrats warned that there would be federal legal challenges and economic repercussions. Other opponents, like Chris Groh of Equality NC, pointed to other cities where similar measures have been in place for years.
This would be the most sweeping anti-LGBT bill in the nation. We cannot allow state policy to be crafted or passed for political gain or out of factless fear.
The most well-known provision of House Bill 2 is the way it legislates who can go into which bathroom. But the law also bans cities and towns from passing their own non-discrimination ordinances. In addition, it creates a statewide non-discrimination law that leaves out the LGBT community.
Following hours of contentious debate, lawmakers sent the five-page bill to Republican Governor Pat McCrory, who signed House Bill 2 into law that night. The chaotic day was over. The fallout was just beginning.
The line has been drawn in North Carolina on the use of public bathrooms for transgender individuals.
That threatens billions of federal school dollars for the
state. The U.S. Justice Department and the state of North Carolina sued each other.
5 days after Governor McCrory signed the law, the lawsuits began. The American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit asking the courts to overturn HB 2. The lawsuit raised a number of legal claims, including violations of equal protection and privacy laws. 28-year-old Joaquin Carcaño is one of four individuals challenging the state law. He spoke at a news conference announcing the lawsuit.
We are no different than any of you. We exist. You've passed us on the street, whether you've known it or not. I guarantee that you've shared a restroom with us. We use it, just like you, to pee. In peace, with privacy, and without fear. Instead of with the anxiety that has gripped my chest since this legislation has passed.
Plaintiffs say that the law denies them basic rights outlined in the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution because it discriminates on the basis of sex and sexual orientation. They also say the law is an invasion of privacy for transgender men and women.
1 week after the bill became law, North Carolina saw the first concrete financial consequence of HB 2. PayPal, the online payment website, scrapped a plan to invest more than $3 million to expand to North Carolina and hire 400 people.
PayPal CEO Dan Schulman said the law perpetuates discrimination and contradicts his company's values. In a statement, Schulman said, quote, becoming an employer in North Carolina where members of our teams will not have equal rights under the law is simply untenable.
PayPal was among the first cancellations.
Then musicians like Bruce Springsteen, Pearl Jam, and Ringo Starr pulled concerts.
Academic conferences also went away.
Visitor bureaus and mayors reported losses in the millions, and there were warnings of bigger events going elsewhere.
But for all the widespread criticism of House Bill 2, there were also many passionate supporters.
To the Speaker of the North Carolina House, Tim Moore, we say thank you!
In mid-April, hundreds of people stood on the lawn of the old state Capitol building in Raleigh, cheering Governor McCrory and the Republican legislators who wrote the law.
This is a day that the Lord has made.
Speaking at the rally, Republican State Senator Buck Newton pointed a finger at LGBT advocacy groups who, he said, were orchestrating an attack on the state.
They insist on forcing us to bow and kiss the ring of their political correctness theology.
LGBT rights groups and other opponents staged a counter-protest across the street.
Real Christians don't hate! Real Christians don't hate!
When the chants did die down, it was only brief. April rolled into May, and the debate roared on, spreading from the streets of downtown Raleigh to the national airwaves. And it was McCrory, the former seven-term mayor of Charlotte, turned governor, who emerged as the bill's biggest advocate.
McCrory had long been seen as a moderate Republican before taking residence in the executive mansion. He attacked what he called the radical media, outside groups, and Hollywood's elite for misrepresenting the measure. And he defended the bill on Meet the Press.
What we've got to do is deal with this extremely new social norm that has come to our nation in a very quick period of time and have these discussions about the complexity of equality while also balancing the concept of privacy.
As the HB2 conflict grew, McCrory's re-election fight was also heating up. His challenger, Democrat Roy Cooper, was raising more money and had a lead in the polls. Both used HB2 to raise the stakes of an already contentious gubernatorial race.
And as the issue went national, so too did the legal maneuvers. Governor McCrory filed a lawsuit asking federal courts to keep HB2 in place. That same day, the U.S. Justice Department responded with a lawsuit of its own.
They created state-sponsored discrimination against transgender individuals.
That's then-U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch announcing the lawsuit. Lynch said federal laws concerning gender and discrimination are clear and that North Carolina's law violates them. According to the federal lawsuit, HB 2 violates the Civil Rights Act by discriminating against state employees and Title IX by discriminating against students at state schools. The Obama administration interpreted Title IX to also cover gender identity, although the Trump administration rescinded that rule last month.
None of us can stand by when a state enters the business of legislating identity and insists that a person pretend to be something or someone that they are not, or invents a problem that does not exist as a pretext for discrimination and harassment.
Governor McCrory vowed to fight Washington, while his challenger for re-election made the loudest calls yet for repeal. Here's Roy Cooper.
We shouldn't have to be dealing with these lawsuits in the first place. This shameful new law has brought them upon us. The governor and the legislature should repeal this law.
The legislative session marched on into June and July. Policymakers passed a budget and actually tweaked HB 2 before adjourning. However, that adjustment dealt with legal recourse and the ability to sue in state court over wrongful discrimination. The bathroom provision remained, and so did the national controversy.
House Bill 2 would soon disrupt one of the state's most cherished staples, basketball.
And they're going to let it run out. It's all over. The Tar Heels are the Atlantic Coast Conference champions.
College basketball is ingrained in North Carolina culture. People remember teachers rolling televisions into classrooms to watch March Madness games during their childhood.
Basketball culture and the bathroom controversy collided, and that moved the stakes to a new level. First, it was the National Basketball Association. Charlotte was scheduled to host the 2017 NBA All-Star Game, but League Commissioner Adam Silver warned there would be consequences.
There's a long track record in this league of being in the forefront on issues impacting human rights and discrimination. And of course, this league, and I think I speak for all leagues, is against discrimination in any form.
In July, the NBA pulled its All-Star Game from Charlotte. It's an event that generates about $100 million for its host city.
2 months later, the NCAA pulled seven college championship games from the state, including NCAA's men's basketball. And the ACC followed, pulling 10 championships, including women's basketball and soccer, golf and tennis, in addition to football. The city of Cary was especially hard hit. Mayor Harold Weinbrech estimated the NCAA's decision will cost the city about $2 million.
We're an NCAA championship city, which means we host NCAA championships, and now we're an NCAA championship city, and we don't host NCAA championships. So it's a major loss because we put a lot of time, money, and effort into becoming an amateur sports mecca.
Meanwhile, North Carolina was also becoming a mecca for partisan bickering. The state's population has grown significantly, and its political makeup has changed. The state is no longer firmly red when it comes to presidential races. In 2008, Barack Obama's closest victory came here. 4 years later, voters handed President Obama his narrowest defeat. House Bill 2 was a perfectly polarizing issue.
That's, to me, the perfect definition of a wedge issue.
Meredith College political science professor David McLennan says with the national rise of populism, House Bill 2 highlighted a divide. Religious rural areas where the economy is still sputtering following the recession, and growing urban regions pushing progressive agendas. In addition to Republican Governor Pat McCrory, other candidates champion the socially divisive legislation. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, seeking re-election, and Buck Newton, vying for Attorney General, regularly use the issue on the stump. Forrest won comfortably, Newton lost, and McCrory came up short, losing by less than 11,000 votes. While many were quick to cite HB 2 as the reason for McCrory's defeat, McLennan, the political scientist, says it's not that simple.
He also had some other issues that were sort of driving his ultimate defeat. So even though HB 2 was an important issue in his race, and I think probably cost him some percentage points in the race, what caused him to lose was the combination of all the issues.
The election was over, but the issue of House Bill 2 remained. Pressure persisted, and in early December, rumblings of a special session grew. Lawmakers first came in for an entirely unrelated effort, stripping the governor's office of some powers.
A week later, in the days before Christmas, state legislators convened again. A deal had apparently been brokered by Senate Leader Phil Berger, House Speaker Tim Moore, and Governor-elect Roy Cooper to repeal the law. If Charlotte would rescind its ordinance, which, to be clear, had already been nullified by HB 2, then state lawmakers would follow and undo the bathroom bill. Members of the press descended on the legislature as a national spotlight intensified on Raleigh again.
But there was no deal. Republicans blamed the Charlotte City Council for at first only rolling back part of its ordinance. Democrats pointed the finger at Republicans for not sticking to the deal.
Why the agreement fell apart is a question that legislators on both sides of the aisle asked themselves in the days that followed the December special session. The answers, of course, depend on who you ask.
For Luke Duvey, the transgender high school student from Morrisville, the failed measure offered further disappointment. Here's his mom, Jean.
Seeing our politicians use fear and marginalize and bring hatred towards a group of people that already is suffering, that was very disheartening.
As 2017 rolled in, the wedge issue was still in place and the law was still on the books. That meant conservatives were holding their ground, progressives had yet to reach a compromise, and the black eye on North Carolina had yet to begin healing. And lawmakers have again failed at reaching a compromise on a second repeal bill introduced in February.
You're listening to A State Divided, HB2 and Transgender Rights, a special report by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. After the break, we take a closer look at HB2's impact on the state's politics, economy, and education, and we recap the legal challenges the law still faces.